Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to episode number 94 of the car wash. On today's show, is Hunt's job on the line? Pits so fine and Chiefs take the bragging rights. Whether you are tuning in on SL Podcast at Ciro.za, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Mucky King 96.7 Game Time, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Roberts, and of course, Mr. Tekko Madise. How are you, Tex?
I'm easy, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, my friend. Nice to hear that there's no garden service going on in the background today.
Trust me, it's going to happen soon, so with no faith.
It's our Thursday gardeners that come. Let's start off with a joke of the day, Tekko. What you've been waiting for the last 7 days.
Yes, please. Give it to me.
What do you call a made-up color? A pigment of your imagination.
Mame pa. Who's helping you with these jokes?
I'm very, very, very clever. No one needs to help me, my friend.
Okay, sure. Then I think that's where the problem is.
Yeah, I need help.
Yo.
But from there, we move into pole position. Pole position is a segment where we ask our fans and our supporters club a certain question and get voice note replies. This week, we asked Kaiser Chiefs managed to overcome their neighbours in the Soweto derby, but how do you rate Chiefs' performance and why? And this is what you have to say.
Yes, the performance to even Yakumnandi so far so good. See what I like about my team. I'm a mistake with Pirates Baba Wayenza in case the Chiefs be punishing now.
I like to say they must keep it up where they are to continue to bring back the spirit of Amakos, the spirit of love and peace, the spirit of nature.
So, Kaiser Chiefs, the only thing I'm happy about is 3 points. As for the performance, I am sorry. I go on. Even if they can open the stadium now, I won't waste my time and money going there. I'm not happy. I'm happy with 3 points, but not with the performance. I go on.
Yeah, no, Kaiser Chiefs yesterday played very well and the performance was very, very good. So, looking at the games that we've been playing, Sadiko Morago and comparing to game Yamaba and Brazil, so today, we are going somewhere.
I will give Kaiser Chiefs 6 out of 10. Reason being, Saturday game, it was more tactical and based on counter-attack. Pirates was above Chiefs. Chiefs was just relying on the mistakes that Pirates was committing.
I think win is a bonus, even though we didn't play that well, but I'm very pleased with the win. We need to improve on our game, to control the tempo of the game. Also, I think Agbe need to handle the ball properly. The combination of Parker and Vinilat is also coming very well with Toli. Overall, I can just give them 60%.
Kaiser Chiefs is a cool. Abadlali bonile ba the confidence and bayinikele. Bayinikele kakhulu, basidivelele into esiyithandayo. Yes. Baseze sa happy kakhulu. And ucoach yethu, sicela ucoach yethu ye ukudefender, please.
Yeah, let me be fair. Kaiser Chiefs didn't play well, but both teams, yeah, abadlalanga kahle.
Yeah, so it takes an interesting game. It's obviously Chiefs take the bragging rights, whether it was deserved or not, even the fact that sort of Stuart Baxter went to apologise, which I find bizarre, to Fabio Davids in terms of the final results and whatnot. What did you think, Tekko? It's always nice to get an expert opinion on this. I don't know if you did the game or not, but what do you think? A well-deserved or lucky win for Chiefs, a well-needed for sure. Always nice to get bragging rights in a massive game like that. And possibly a bit underwhelming from Pirates, even though they had the fair share of possession. How did you see that?
Sean, did you watch the game?
I watched about half an hour.
Okay. So I did the game, and I think it was one of those games, to be honest with you, if we put the results aside, it was not an exciting game at all.
And obviously, no fans, blah, blah, blah. We've been down this road.
Yeah, there was no... how can I put it? Like, there was no spark on the game. You'd hope and expect something would happen. There was too many turnovers. You know, none of the teams were really, really in control of the game. You know, and a few opportunities were created in the first half. Whereas Pirates actually could have scored. Chiefs, I think, had one or two opportunities. But second half became different when, honestly, Pirates made two blunders and they got punished for that.
Mm.
You know, the mistake by Tulan Klatscha trying to play the ball to Bonjani at the back, and then the ball got intercepted and then he could score. And then another mistake by conceding a penalty when you allow the ball to bounce and that becomes difficult. But it was one of those two actually mistakes that happened. And also, I feel like if it wasn't for those mistakes, of course the results would have been different. And I think the people would have looked at more of the performance of both teams than the results itself. I think the results are not a true reflection of the game. But yet again, it's a victory that Kaizer Chiefs needed to build that momentum, because in some patches as well, Kaizer Chiefs look especially dangerous when they come out in transition, because they allowed Paris to have the ball and defend it a little bit deeper. But whenever they go out, Chiefs look very, very dangerous. And I think if it's something that if Kaizer Chiefs can get it right, this season they will be dangerous, because at least now they have also a different way to punish teams, because I think that's one of those elements that if they can get it right, I think it will work very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously baby steps, right? I mean, it's also nice to say, cool, great result for Chiefs. Again, it was well needed. I think Pirates also possibly needed it more as well. But are you seeing a slow progression in terms of Kaizer Chiefs' performance? As neutrals, are you seeing an improvement as week goes on, weeks by weeks go on?
Look, to be honest with you, bro, we're seeing a lot of... This is us talking on Kaizer Chiefs. There's a lot of positives that we see.
Mm.
A lot of structure, a lot of identity that you see that Kaizer Chiefs want to impose on their game. So it's easy to identify who does what, who, and where, and what happens when they have the ball, what happens when Dolly has the ball. So it's easy to see that there's a lot of work that we put in on the Kaizer Chiefs side as well. But also on the Atlanta Pirates side as well, is because the lack of consistency of the players, so that Atlanta Pirates end up making too many changes, so you really don't see the flow, because it gets disrupted all the time. But there's other players, when they play, Orlando Pirates become better. Like Dlamini came on as a sub, whom he scored a game before, a winner. He came on as a sub and then he changed the game. He put some energy into the game where you'd want to see that happening all the time. You also, on the Pirates side, you want to see your Mango back and doing the business for them. You want to see your Bullies. You want to see Hoto again on form. So with a lot of players, they might come and say, but the guy, we didn't have the full squad. Our players are still injured and all that type of stuff. And Kaizer Chiefs also, they're building that momentum. And I think both teams needed those 3 points. It wasn't a game that a draw was going to benefit anyone.
Yeah, we both called a draw. It was certainly looking like a draw. And you called it a very boring 1-1 draw, and then obviously what happened. This might be an obvious question, but or you might have an obvious answer, but do you think the chopping and changing within the Pirates team has a massive effect in terms of them losing their identity, which we have spoken about before? Do you not think potentially that, right, you've got a squad of 30 or however big Pirates team is, that and you should be professional enough and know exactly what your job is to keep that identity of Pirates. What do you think? And I know we've spoken about obviously the different coaches, etc., etc. Mm. Do you think all this chopping and changing just doesn't help that matter at all?
It doesn't. And at times you're forced to do those changes because of lack of confidence, loss of form, injury, suspension as a coach.
Mm.
And now you look like a coach that is always rebuilding or trying new things, but your situation is forced by the players, because the players are the ones who make the system to work. And at times I feel like there's a lot of of players at Orlando Pirates that are doing similar things, that are doing the same things. Like, it's, there's no, for instance, you've got Hoto. You've got, Hoto is a very, very good winger. We all know Hoto as a winger, and he'll bring in those crosses, right? So now, how do you make sure that Hoto is aligned with Mabasa if you desire to play Mabasa as a striker to benefit from those crosses?
Sure.
You know, and then how do you balance that on the right hand side? And then you come into the midfield. How do you find the proper balance with Monare, Makaringe, and I think who's the third one? Because they normally play three in the midfield. How do you find that balance where maybe you play one defensive midfielder and two attacking, depending on the game that you're playing? So I think with all the personnel that is in there at Pirates, every coach will come there and feel like he can try so many things because you've got so many players and different personnel and different styles of play. But it's difficult to find that rhythm. And I think finding that rhythm is going to take time for coaching new guys. But at times, you need to stick to the same team for 3 to 4 games to find your rhythm, to find your team.
Again, you would think that being a full-time professional, that whoever comes in, whoever slots in at certain situations or positions, knows his job exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So whoever's playing as a nine would understand Hoto, et cetera, et cetera. And do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, but that doesn't seem to be happening. So you've got a question of, in terms of what's happening within the change room. Are they sitting with the players, going through the breakdowns, et cetera, et cetera? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you mean, and you'd be so surprised that you know, you feel like we players are always waiting for that opportunity to be given to them, and once they actually do get that opportunity, instead of playing within the structure, you wanna improvise and do what you wanna do because you wanna make your mark, you wanna be known, you wanna be seen, which is fine, I understand. But as long as you play within the structure of the club, within the structure, within the system of the club, and I think that's where most teams needs to be. You need to have what we call, what we normally say, it's an identity. Have your structure so that, because the thing is, Sean, you can't be, especially when you're a big club. You're a big club, you need to have a structure, a philosophy, and then your coach needs to, whoever coach that comes through, needs to fit in with those criteria that you have as a team. Not the other way around. You can't be always adjusting to what the coach is every time when you hire a new coach. So I think there are teams, especially big teams, that actually do need to go back and identify those philosophies and stick to them, that everybody needs to adjust to them, not the other way around.
You know, it's not easy being a coach. It's not easy being a coach of a massive team like Pirates or Chiefs. So they certainly have their work cut out. Let's just quickly jump to AmaZulu vs Cape Town City. Another cracker. I think I called a draw. I'm not too sure. I can't remember what you called. Tex, did you say AmaZulu win?
I think I said AmaZulu win. Did I say AmaZulu win? I don't remember.
Anyway, good shot. Obviously, a massive game for Eric and a massive game for Benny, and obviously coming up trench. Well, what do you think of the game? A fair result?
I think I remember saying, look, there is a grudge game between Cape Town City and AmaZulu, whether it's out there in the open or not, right? Nobody wants to lose to each other. And I strongly feel like where AmaZulu was, I think they needed the results more. And also you look at we always speak about the curse of the MTN 8. It's never easy to lose that trophy and 2 days, 3 days later you have a game and a game and be consistent.
Yeah, sure.
It's very, very difficult. So I knew that from an emotional point of view that AmaZulu have an edge because Cape Town City won the game after they lost at the MTN 8. But also you must understand the MTN 8 final took them to extra time, right? So now the next game that they played it because they were emotionally attached to it because they wanted to win to make themselves feel better. So now fatigue kicks in because now you have the second game. So I think from the emotional point of view, so that's why I chose AmaZulu. Not because Cape Town City are not a good team. It's just that I know how it feels after losing MTN 8. You struggle to come back and find your form again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see the boys were a bit tired, but I do believe they've had a good few days off now. So hopefully they're back. And, you know, you've obviously got an allegiance with Cape Town City in some sort. Not saying that you support them, but it's always nice to see them do well. Let's move on to quite an interesting story quickly. Following the Cairo derby last Friday, which Al Ahly won in incredible fashion with a 5-3 victory over rival Zamalek, Peter Mosimani's side had been slapped with a fine by the Egyptian FA. Fines were handed out to both sides. But, you know, I mean, that's all good. But what I like about this story, Teko, is that you can see any team that Pizzo coaches, you can see the hunger, you can see the pride, you can see, do you know what I mean? Even though it was a big game, you can see what Pizzo has installed in Al Ahly already in terms of the win mentality. And he's fine for getting a fine. He doesn't care. As long as they get the results.
No, fine. If the season goes by without Pizzo being fine, it's not a good season.
Yeah, it's always good to see Pizzo do well. We're big fans of him, so and always good to see Al Ahly do well. So,
yeah.
Massive result for them in a massive game.
Yeah.
Let's just move on to something quickly. A sneak peek. Myself and Thomas Quinate spoke about the financial crisis players face after their careers. Teko, we've spoken about this at length on various podcasts, and it was nice to get a third party's opinion as well, and it went quite well. But have a listen, guys, this little sneak peek that me and Thomas spoke about yesterday.
I'm forced to ask the question, Sean, and I'm putting you on the spotlight here as a former professional player. Mm. You know, does it have to do with education sometimes, or is it peer pressure or competition among US players?
The answer to your question, Thomas, is it's all the above. It's the peer pressure, it's the lack of education, it's trying to outdo. I mean, when I was at Sundance, I remember very clearly two players that were, well, I wouldn't say two players, but they would try and outdo each other with certain things and cars especially. And I can tell you now, both those two players are completely bankrupt. Completely.
Well, there you have it, guys. It'll be good to hear your feedback on what you think of that. It's a subject that Teko and I are quite passionate about, and it needs to be spoken about a bit more. I don't want to get too much into it now, Teko, but we're quite passionate about it, and I think a lot needs to be done in terms of the PSL getting involved, which I did touch on. And we've seen various, and we continue to see various horrible stories in what's happening with players post-football. But not cool, but hopefully there's room for improvement with that. But from there, we move on to the international news desk
with Kurt Bakkerfeld.
We are joined by Soccer Dudes international news correspondent, Mr. Kurt I Travel the World Bakkerfeld. How are you doing, Kurt?
Gents, I'm good, thank you. How are we living?
We're living
good. How are you living? You feeling better?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Sorry, I just had a migraine last week. I get those from time to time. We're all good, boys. We're all good. How are we? How are we all? What's life like?
Life is peachy. I don't know what Teko's life is like. How's your life, Teko?
It's ice creamy.
Good.
Life is good. Can't complain.
Good.
How's sunny Sea Point? Good.
It's okay, eh? It's not too bad. I'm at the office today. I'm sitting in studio, actually.
You moved? I can't move. Did you move?
No, no. Oh, I mean, you were
decorating. Hey, that's all you're seeing Instagram.
That's the thing. That's the thing, yeah.
People who are in love. Hey,
exactly. Oh, yes. We do things together. We paint together.
Amen.
Those who paint together stay together.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
But Curdy, enough about your love life. Xavi returns. What's happening, bro?
Yeah, pal. I think it's a very exciting appointment. I don't know if you guys saw any of his comments at his official unveiling on Monday, but you know, when he speaks with authority. Xavi has a relationship with the club. There are striking similarities to the appointment of Pep Guardiola in 2008. Let me just point a few out. Both graduates of the youth academy, the famed Barcelona youth academy. Both ex-midfielders, both went on to captain the first team. Both succeeding Dutchmen. Pep replaced Frank Rijkaard in 2008. Xavi replaces Ronald Koeman, both appointed by Joan Laporte in two different spells as president. And, you know, boys, they do say that history has a, you know, as a thing. It repeats itself often. So that's what a lot of Barcelona fans will be hoping for. You know, Xavi has spent the last 6 years of his career preparing for this moment. When he left in 2015, he and anyone who had ever encountered him knew that he would be back. He would be back to coach Barcelona at some point in his career. So the final 4 years of his career, he spent at Al Sadd in Qatar, obviously. But while playing, he was coaching at junior level while getting his badges. And then in 2019, he got his UEFA Pro license, took over the first team of Al Sadd, and really impressed everybody he worked with. So it was just a matter of time before he returned to Barcelona. It's obviously difficult circumstances. The team's underperforming. I think they're currently in 10th in La Liga. So it's a difficult situation, but I think that there's a lot of very good young players in that side that Xavi, I'm sure, can't wait to work with. You know, the likes of Ansu Fati and Gavi, who's 17 and already playing for Spain.
Yeah.
I'm sure Ricky Puig will get a look in. I think that there's a lot of players that Xavi will be excited to work with, and I think that it's going to work. I think players are going to gravitate towards him. He's, you know, he knows that club inside and out. He made 767 appearances for that club. I think he spent 24 years there. So yeah, I think it's a good appointment. I know that the recent trend of appointing ex-players has not really gone down too well, but this feels different. I think that Xavi is going to be Pep 2.0. I can't wait to see it happen.
Yeah, that was my next question, right? I mean, you go back in the history of appointing, I mean, the idea of appointing ex-heroes or ex-players, it's awesome, but theoretically sometimes doesn't work, and most of the time doesn't work. And we've seen it now at United with Oli, which we're going to touch on in a few seconds. But you think he's got what it takes? Do you think he's got that persona, that ego to carry that dressing room?
I think so. I think if you remember, Xavi throughout his career, he wasn't the kind of guy who wore his heart on his sleeve. He was never emotional. And I think that that's going to work in his favor here, because you run the risk of, when appointing a former player, you run the risk of him coming in and having maybe too much of an affiliation to the club, where certain decisions are made that he might not have made with a level head, or, you know, while thinking clearly. I think that Xavi is someone who, while he cares about Barcelona, he's also extremely focused on the job. And he knows that this is a job. And I feel like that's the way he conducted himself throughout his career as a player. He was always focused. He never looked like he was thinking about anything else but football. And I feel like that's going to rub off on the players. It has to. I read a report yesterday that he's introduced all these rules to the training ground and to the players and staff, about players having to arrive, I think, 90 minutes before a training session, staff having to arrive 2 hours before a training session, certain meals not being allowed, players, yeah, I think...
That's what's up.
Yeah, that's good. Exactly. And I think that Barcelona need that. He brought fines back. So there will be fines for players who obviously act out.
I'm shocked that it wasn't in place already, if you think about it.
Well, no, of course. And I just think that, yeah, he knows, what being from Barcelona is all about, what coming through that academy is all about. And I feel like he will have a preference of working with players who share the same values. Because Barcelona is a structure, it's a system where players who come into that system at 25, 26, 27 really, really struggle, because it's a different wavelength to the players who've come through that academy, who have all been playing in the same style and with the same philosophy. So Xavi, I think, will use those academy graduates, all those young players who are in that team, just like he was as a player when Pep came in. Xavi, Iniesta, Messi, Pique, Busquets, all these guys really, really shone, and I feel like Xavi will place importance on that. I've already read that Luke de Jong, the striker who was brought in on deadline day from Sevilla on loan, is going to be shipped out immediately. So he already has a clear idea of the way his team will play, and it's not going to be putting balls into the box. So yeah, I can't wait to see it start.
Yeah, interesting times ahead. Let's move on to your favorite coach in the world, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What's happening there? And I think the question is, if and when Ole gets sacked, who could potentially step in?
So the latest that I've seen is that the club aren't going to sack him anytime soon, which which is obviously a shock, but it also brings into question how serious the board are about winning titles. The Glazers have been accused of just being happy with United being there and thereabouts and not actually worrying too much about the success of the team. And I think that it's a pity that, you know, in November, most Manchester United fans are waiting for next season, because it seems that they will give Solskjaer until then at least. So while I do understand the frustration and anger from those fans, I do think that there is some method to the madness. I think that maybe it only makes sense to fire Solskjaer to replace him when there's actually someone to replace him with. Right now, it feels like maybe there isn't anybody available that is among their preferred candidates. And Sean, to answer your second question there, I think Brendan Rodgers is one of the favourites. He's doing a good job at Leicester City. I'm not sure whether he will be able to take United to that next level. I haven't really... Yeah, I'm not convinced.
Feels like a David Moyes appointment.
Yeah, but also interestingly, somebody tweeted it the other day, and it's a good point that if David Moyes had not worked for United when he did, or when he took over from Ferguson in 2013, he would have been one of the candidates to replace Solskjaer because of how well West Ham are doing. So I thought that was an interesting point, and it's probably accurate. Yeah. Then Erik ten Hag from Ajax is another candidate. But both of those guys, Brendan Rodgers and ten Hag, I think are unwilling to leave their clubs mid-season, which is understandable. But anyway, from the outside, it looks like United are sleepwalking to a decision. That is largely based on the club's dealing in the past. Something that I read on The Athletic the other day is that, and this is really reliable, Solskjaer said yes to the United job in 2018, 2 months before Mourinho was sacked. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about how slow United are to act. So it should really come as no surprise that the Liverpool result was not enough to get him sacked. And I thought that after that City performance, I'm sure you guys watched the game, but it was just a training session for City. I thought that surely the club were going to pull the trigger after that, because that was very embarrassing. That was even worse than the Liverpool game for me. But no, they aren't going to replace him just yet.
Well, I suppose it also comes down to affordability, right? I mean, he's just signed a new deal that takes him to 2024.
Yeah.
There's obviously a massive clause in there in terms of if he does get sacked. So you would think they'd take that into consideration, right, when signing a coach. Curtie boy, thank you. You go back to your little your hole in the wall in Seapoint and go paint some walls, and we thank you for your time.
Thanks, boys. Nice to chat.
Thanks, man.
Righty. From there, Tex, just a quick story from obviously ex-club legends that have turned into coaches when we move to something local in terms of Neil Tovey. He issues an ego warning to the Sundowns coaches. We've obviously spoken about this at length in the past. But he says he thinks it's sustainable as long as the roles are defined and the messages conveyed to players are relevant to each of their abilities as the coaches. The messages also have to be of synergy. That is very vital. You can't have one coach saying this to the player and the other one is mentioning something different on tactics and what they all want to achieve. So we have spoken about this, Tech. It's nice to see Tovey having his two cents worth. Obviously, he won the league as a head coach there, 2005-2006. Just a quick one, Tex. Do you think what is happening at Sundowns, have they found their synergy? We had a couple of podcasts about this at the beginning of the season in terms of could it work, is it going to work, too many egos, etc. How do you think it has played out so far?
Look, I think as a club and as coaches, where there are difficulties, they will find them, because also they also themselves, they're dealing with new players that have different personalities as well.
Yeah.
So to make a team out of all those different players from different clubs, you know, different coaching, to actually, you know, make sure that they play the Sundowns way, it's going to take time. And when that doesn't work out, because you do have three coaches, it looks like things are not working well. You guys are against each other. There's no... Because people... Here's the thing, Sean. People are used to traditional things. When you do something that is not traditional, it becomes very foreign. And because it's not understood, people tend to dismiss it. They don't like to change. So now, you cannot come and tell me about how Sundowns coaches should be operating when they are dominant right now. They won the league last season. They just won the MTN 8. So you should come when nothing is happening. They're not in a good space. They're trying to figure things out. Because I think if Sundowns, they didn't win anything last season, I think I said this before, if Sundowns, they didn't win any trophy last season, everybody would have said Sundowns failed. Me too, I would have said Sundowns failed.
Yes.
And it wasn't going to be a good look for the three coaches as well, because the pressure is, this is the first time it's happening in South Africa. Now we have all these three different personalities that are coaching the team.
Yes.
So now, coming to the new season, they won the first trophy, which is an MTN 8. They are still unbeaten. They haven't conceded. So I don't think it's the right time to question Mamelodi Sundowns.
Yeah.
As to why are the coaches working well? Look at the numbers. The numbers on the boards are telling you.
The stats
are telling you. So we appreciate. I think as a club, you because you're that dominant, you're up there. It's always going to be questions and there's always going to be speculation. There's always going to be something people that want to know, because this is a fascinating situation. And yes, it's very, people are curious, they want to know, which is perfect, which is fine. But this is a unique situation where it hasn't been done before.
Yes.
So when we get into the position where the arc is always going to be maybe not agreeing on the same thing, it's possible because those are three different people, but they are driving the same car.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think the bottom line is, all these coaches, no matter what the personality they have, all the players in the club, no matter what personality they have, no matter what teams they come from, at the end of the day, they are working towards the same goal, which is to achieve and bring results to Mamelodi Sundowns.
Yeah, I think so. I think the three coaches, in my opinion, have too much to lose with this not working, because you know, all three of them have a chance to get trophies under their belt, which is going to add to their CVs. Let's not forget the African Champions League, you know, that they are sort of top three favorites to win it, and that is obviously their goal. And that would go under their CV as winners. So there's too much for them to lose if this doesn't work out. So I presume that the communication is key. I presume that they are communicating. And obviously me looking after a few players, and the feedback I have got from certain players is that it is working. So that's cool.
Yeah. Look, Sean, it's if it wasn't working, I promise you, if it wasn't working, they'll be the first ones to bounce.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, the pressure that they're in, yet also understand the magnitude of, how can I put it? Because now they're following a guy that has won so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peter has set the standard so high, and coming after him, it becomes very difficult. Now you need to clear and start your own path, and Sundowns are trying to do that with our coaches as well. So them not getting along, them not winning trophies, It's a failure to them, not to the club. And you want to be, you as a coach, you want to coach. Good coaches want to coach good players, bro.
Sure.
Finishing club. So you as a good coach, you want to be around your big three teams that have good players that you want to coach, so that you can improve them, so you can get better results. So it's important for those three coaches to win games. It's important to bring trophies because they know what's at stake. It's
just a quick question and a quick answer. Sundowns without Shalalile, would we be speaking the same conversation?
I think we would, because before Shalulile, there was somebody else, but it was never a top striker.
Yeah.
If you remember Sundowns, we never, for the last 10, I don't remember having like a top striker that is always getting goals for us.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that's the trend that Mamelodi Sundowns has done now. We're not going to rely on a top goal scorer to actually win his games. But fortunate enough, when Sundowns was in transition, to start playing differently and have the surprising elements, Shalalile was part of the package that came into the team to diversify the play. And now that he's scoring so much, the shift becomes Shalalile, which is perfect. We never had it's been a while since we ever had a striker like that. But yet again, also you must also understand, we Sundowns haven't found their true form. They haven't found their flow. Because once they do, you will have Temba Zwane with your 10 goals. You'll have Sorinho with your 8 to 9 goals. you have Lakay with four, Tapelo Morena with four. So there's goals around. You have Villegas with six or seven.
Yeah,
so there's goals around. And I think because Sundowns has always been that, you forever get those numbers. You'll never get a striker that is the only person that scores in the team. And I think it's a plus now because of Sundowns has such a player.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, what an impact he has had for sure.
Okay.
Let's move on swiftly, just quickly, and let's chat about Gavin Hunt in terms of his job potentially being at risk. The Chip United head coach has become increasingly under pressure due to results that have not been forthcoming for the Eastern Cape outfit, especially after their 0-0 draw against Maritzburg on the weekend. Chipper have lost five and drawn four from their last nine matches and have only scored three goals and conceded 11. Dex.
Yeah. Those are not good numbers.
Bro. That's not good numbers. And obviously, you know, no disrespect to any players out there, he obviously doesn't have the freedom and the luxury of buying up who he wants and sort of building a new team. I think that's the risk with someone like Chipper, is that you don't have the budget that some other teams have. But you would think a coach of Gavin Hunt's caliber, he could turn things, or could have, or could turn things around. What's obviously not going right there, Teko? Do you think it's just a lack of quality?
Lack of quality in a way that he wants to play.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue. You have Chipper that is been emphasizing on carpet football for so many years. So now you've developed a philosophy in the club that you only sign players that are able to play the ball on the ground. Now you bring a coach that wants to bring different elements. And then you have your 32, 28, 29 year olds to unlearn what they've learned for so many years to become new players and change. Not every player can do that. So I think it becomes one of those challenges. And we in the pandemic like this, it's very difficult for teams to open up the budget and buy new players. So for me, it's going to be a struggle for Gavin to turn things around. But it's possible. We've seen the gaps, especially down there. You know, the margin is very narrow. You win two games, you're back in the fold. So I think it's the players finding themselves, finding ways on how to win within the system that Gavin Hunt's won, and also implementing their talent.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. If anyone can do it, Gavin Hunt certainly can, and certainly got a very good technical team around him. So interesting space to watch that. Quickly, Tex, let's just turn on to place your bets. The 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifiers are up and coming. Bafana against Zimbabwe. Not an easy game. I still don't really understand what happens if we win this and where we progress to. And it's all a bit confusing for me, but we have to go with Bafana on this one in terms of previous results as well. We're on form, new coach, fresh ideas, someone who believes in the youth. Someone who's come in and sort of changed things up, and you can say what you want about him, but again, we go back to the results. The results don't lie. How do you see this one faring?
It's gonna be tough playing against them, mainly because you do have players in Zimbabwe that are very familiar with South African style of play, South African personalities. So it's going to be very difficult, but it's an important victory for us. So we need to win the game so that we play with a little bit of ease on Sunday in Ghana, against Ghana, because things are going to be tough there. So you don't want to have a bad game here and expect to win over there. So I think today's game is... They're playing tonight, right? Tonight's game, I think it's important.
I think it's tonight,
yeah. Yeah, it's important. The victory is important.
So Tego, what happens now? Bafana win tonight, we go to Ghana, what happens?
I think when if we go to Ghana, we get a point. I think that solidifies our first place in the group. I think we become number one in the group. And then from number one in the group, now we need to play all the number ones in other groups. So it's still a long way to go. But I think these are the times where we need to, you know, make sure that we use our home ground advantage very well.
Yeah, it's certainly a step in the right direction. I can't remember the last time I've said those words and Bafana in the same sentence. So it's all looking positive. Let's move on to this week in football history.
Today we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
On the 14th of November 2009, an 81st minute goal from Obafemi Martin sent Nigeria to the 2010 World Cup. On the 16th of November 1974, former Man United midfielder Paul Scholes was born in Salford. He went on to make over 700 appearances for Man United. Teko, would you say that Scholes was probably one of the best midfielders ever in the Premier League?
On Scholes, I think he was good. I don't want to lie, but I think what's this guy that played for Chelsea? Lampard. I think Lampard was better, or even Steven Gerrard.
Stevie G
and Lampard had elements that were better than Scholes. Scholes will give you those long balls. You shoot outside the box. You'll bite. But there was something with Stevie G and Lampard that had. And even Stevie G, I strongly believe that he was better than Lampard. Because Stevie G will do stuff that Lampard could. Lampard will get into the box very late and score those goals. Stevie G will come back and fucking tackle and defend and go back in and create a goal. Yeah. So I think Stevie G was an all-round better midfielder for me.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Righty, thanks for that, Teko. Let's move on swiftly to this week's Car of the Week. And I looked into the brand new AMG GLS 63 4MATIC. This is an absolute beast of a Mercedes-Benz. At the apex of luxury and performance, you will find the Mercedes AMG GLS 63, an ultra luxurious SUV with a colossal powertrain that rules the streets. The Mercedes AMG can very fairly be called a monster of sorts. It's big, imposing, and scary, and often elicits a scream from unsuspecting passengers. Powered by the monstrous AMG 41 bi-turbo V8 petrol engine, the GLS 63 cranks out 450 kilowatts and powers all four wheels through the super slick 9-speed AMG speed shift transmission. The sprint to 100 kilometers an hour is done eye-watering 4.5 seconds, and the bulk of the GLS will go into electronically limited 280 kilometers top speed. If you happen to have a few million rand lying around and want a vehicle that decimates all in its total comfort, then the GL63 is the only way to go. Coming in only, Teko, at 3.5 million rand. I do give it a 9.5 out of 10. It is absolutely beautiful. I don't know if you've seen it, Teko. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no. I'm 3.5 million.
3.5 was.
Nah.
I think anything from Mercedes in the AMG range is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it is. Most definitely.
But we need to get motivated to get there, Brother Bear. And here I have today's motivational quotes. You are the mental architect of your own destiny. Which I love.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically,
it's
my guy, Bob Proctor.
Oh.
He's basically saying what you think about and what you think about, you bring about, right? So thoughts become things, whether it's positive or negative, you attract into your life what you think about. And I think that's why meditation is so it's imperative in our crazy lifestyle that we have these days. But yeah, nice one. You are a mental architect of your own destiny. And that is how we wrap up episode number 94 of The Car Wash, guys. Whether you've been listening on SL Podcasts or Settle Today, in Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or the most weekend 96.7 Game Time, thank you for tuning in. I've been your host, obviously, Sean Roberts, and my good friend, Mr. Tickle, he said, thank you, my brother.
Thank you, Seanisto Walignon.
Appreciate it, and we will see you same time, same place next week. Ciao.
Peace.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is The Car Wash on the SL Podcast. This is a Slangana Car.
Bob.